Rise and Shine with Robbo and friends
on Vision.
It's a great pleasure to be joined on the phone by Abdu Murray, the North American Director with the Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. G'day, Abdu. How you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's so good to talk to you. And, of course, you're at the Apologetics Symposium at the moment in Sydney. Is this your first time into Australia?
It is. It is. It's beautiful here.
Excellent. I'm glad you're enjoying it so far. Have you had a chance to do the touristy things, or has it been all just business for you this week?
All business so far.
Well, I hope you get to see a koala or a kangaroo before you go home.
I hope so too.
Well, look, it's great to chat to you. As mentioned, the North American director with RZIM and the author of a number of books. You're obviously a speaker and a thinker as well. But I'm keen to get a bit of your story. We're going to be talking a bit today about demystifying our Muslim neighbours. Obviously, here in Australia, we've got a very multicultural society. There seems to be more and more Muslims in our communities. How do we share our faith effectively with them? And I guess understanding their culture, and you understand it brilliantly because you, growing up as a Muslim, certainly very devout in your faith, but you've obviously had a moment of conversion along your life. So tell us a little bit about your childhood. Where did you grow up, and how did you come to that realization of a Christian faith taking precedence over the Islamic faith?
So I was raised in the United States, in the northern United States, in Michigan, near the Detroit area. I believe firmly in this idea that truth is true, even if no one believes it, and falsehood is falsehood, even if everyone believes it. In other words, there is an objective truth. And this was important because I think what was happening, and it still happens to some degree nowadays, is people have this idea of subjective truth, you know, whatever is true for you is true for you, and my religion is my religion, yours is yours, and just keep it to yourself, I'll keep mine to myself, and that kind of thing. Well, when I was growing up, I would have none of that. I thought Islam was true, and everyone should believe Islam is true. Growing up, I did have some Muslim friends in the area, but for the most part, it was a very sort of homogeneously white area. There's a lot of diversity now in the area that I grew up in the suburb of Detroit. Then it was a lot of, you know, not a lot of Muslims. So I would engage in conversations with folks often because they would ask me, what's that about? Why are you a Muslim? What does that mean exactly? And as I was studying, I was learning more and more about it. I was raised as a, you know, regular old, you know, healthy American teenager. So I had those proclivities as well. But I really fundamentally cared about Islam. And so I would engage in conversations with people all the time about what it meant to be a Muslim and these kind of things. But oftentimes I would engage in conversations with people who were at least nominally Christian. You know, back then it was fashionable to say you were a Christian, even if you didn't mean it. Hmm. And nowadays it's not. Nowadays people give up the pretense. But people who'd say they were a Christian, I'd ask them a fundamental question. I'd say, why are you a Christian? And they would say, essentially, they say tradition. You know, I grew up in the church.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a Presbyterian because we go to the Presbyterian church on Christmas and Easter. So I guess I'm a Presbyterian, that kind of a thing. And so my response back was more along the lines of, well, wait a minute. You trust your eternal soul to a worldview that somebody else thought through. Have you thought through it? Because tradition can't be good enough. And so I would start to show the problems I thought were the problems in Christianity. And I was pretty good at this, but there were some people who actually knew what they were talking about, and they responded back to me. And that began what amounts to a 9-year-long journey into studying not just Christianity and Islam, but a lot of other religious systems and non-religious systems as well, to see where the truth lies. Because I remember reading a passage of Scripture when I was doing my investigation. John the Baptist was talking to those who came to him to be baptized, and he said to them, who told you to flee from the wrath to come? Meaning, of course, God's judgment on the people for their sinfulness. He says to them, do not even think to say to yourself, you have Abraham as your father, as if that would save them. For I tell you, God can raise up children of Abraham from the stones. What John the Baptist was saying was that tradition won't save you, but truth will. Well, I was saying that to Christians. Why are you a Christian? They say tradition, and I'd say not good enough. Interestingly, it was John the Baptist's words, as I was reading the Bible, not to believe a word of it, just to read it to see what was wrong with it. It was those words that convicted me that maybe I was believing in Islam. I had gathered enough evidence to justify my tradition, but not to see if it was true. And that's what began a part of a 9-year-long journey to see what's true and what's not. And over the course of those 9 years, it was the evidence of the Bible, of its transmission found through the centuries, of the resurrection of Jesus as a historical event, and ultimately how the gospel actually showed me that what I was wishing was true about God in Islam was actually true about God in Christianity.
Mm, that's fantastic. So over those 9 years, were you like high school age, college age?
Yeah, it really started in earnest in college. It started sort of towards the tail end of high school. But really when I got into college is when it really started. There was a couple of guys who came to the door when I was in my undergraduate days at university, and there were a couple Baptist guys, and they wanted to talk to me about Jesus. And I started to really have these long conversations with these guys. And that's when I first started really saying, okay, I've got to study this a little bit more, because these guys aren't as easy of pushovers as I once thought. They would actually often have an answer for me, or they had the best answer you can give a person. They'd say, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. And then they would. They'd get back to me, and they'd come back with, you know, sort of, we thought about your question, and here's how we think we would answer it. So that's when I really began to study. So, I would engage with people from middle school and high school ages on these issues, but I really began to focus on maybe Christianity might be true. I think I would say I'd started that in college days, still pretty confident Islam was true, above and beyond Christianity, but it really started to mount over the course of those 9 years and into when I was in law school.
Mm, wow, that's amazing. So you mentioned law school. You actually ended up going on to work as a lawyer, I believe, before you've come to work in ministry these days.
Yep, and I'm still actually licensed attorney. I was a trial lawyer for years. I became a lawyer in the year 2000. And was a trial attorney, did a lot of business litigation and that kind of thing. And really based on, I love to present argument. I don't like to get into arguments or quarrels with people, but I do like to argue the issues. I do like to argue the facts. And I'm sort of built that way. And being a litigator, an attorney, really helped me to sort of scratch that itch where I could find evidence, understand how evidence works, understand how argument works, and then use it in real life.
So when we talk about demystifying our Muslim neighbors, for listeners here in Australia, I mean, I'm assuming that there's a fair amount of commonality for Muslims around the world. I mean, obviously, there would be some minor cultural issues, but as far as people here in Australia who have a heart for reaching out, maybe they've got a neighbor or someone that they know from work who identifies as a Muslim, what would be some things that you could share that would help us to better understand who they are and maybe where they're coming from as far as their worldview goes?
Well, that's a great question. And I think that the first thing we have to do is, one, is develop that love for them, not a fear of them. I will tell you this. I've seen people who engage in an outreach to Muslims, not because they actually love the Muslims and hope they go to heaven. It's because they sort of fear Islam and want to sort of minimize the chances that these people become radicals. Mm. So I think the first thing we have to do is harness and fan into flame our love for Muslims. So that's the first and foremost thing I think we should do. I think the next thing, the best way to demystify someone in your own life is to actually get to know them on a friendship level, not on the missionary project level. I remember that there were people who were like sort of my, you know, missionary caseworkers, as it were. they liked me, but insofar as they could keep talking to me about the Bible and other things. And those were good relationships, but they weren't solid or genuine relationships. It was people who still engaged with me very much on religious and theological issues, but I knew that even if I never became a Christian, they would always be my friend.
Mm, that's so cool.
And when you do that, you demystify someone, because the media certainly won't do it for you. They'll either make it look like every Muslim is just a peace-loving person who doesn't care about violence, or they'll say the opposite. Every Muslim is a bloodthirsty animal who can't wait to kill you. That becomes either complete fear-mongering, or it becomes a whitewashing of things that might not be totally true. So getting to know a person is the best way to demystify. Give you a classic example of this. I remember when there was a mosque opening up down the street from my church, and a lot of people were asking me, hey, Abdu, how can we oppose this in the city council? How can we stop this mosque from being built? And I said, well, do you have any good reasons for it? Do you have knowledge that there's, you know, bad activities happening there or whatever? And they said, well, no. I said, do you have a legal reason? They said, well, no. I said, well, here's a good thing then. Maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you shouldn't oppose it. Maybe what you should do instead is say nothing or even support it, and then go down the street when they open up and bake a bunch of sweets. Tell them that there's no animal shortening whatsoever in these sweets. We thought of you. We're from the church down the street. We would love to engage in dialogue with you. Welcome to the neighborhood. Now, they may or may not be radical Muslims or whatever. I have no idea. But you'll never know until you get to know them.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the best ways to demystify them. I think if we think of Muslims as people who are always sitting behind the stairwells, you know, twisting their mustaches, thinking of ways to blow the place up, we're never going to be able to, they will always be mysterious to us. But if we get to know them as people and realize that if the Bible is true, and I believe it is, that people, all people, are inherently sinful, but they're also people made in God's image, I think that helps to demystify things quite a bit. So those are just two of the most easy steps to do that in. And then third, I would just say this, be a lover of questions. Ask them questions over and over again, not to get ammunition, but to get actual answers so that you can see what kind of a Muslim they are. Because one of the things I think we often think of is that Muslims tend to be very devoted to their faith. And Muslims are just like other people. They have varying degrees of devotion. And many Muslims who claim to be strong Muslims are proud of being Muslim, but there's no evidence that they actually practice Islam in their life. And so you might find out just how secular they might be, in which case your approach would be different.
That's a good point. And I guess that's right. I mean, obviously, you've mentioned those two ends of the spectrum, you know, the terrorist and all the peace-loving, almost, I guess, the example would be the Sunday Christian, I guess, if you put it into our context. And I mean, obviously, there's, you know, they're on a spectrum from one end to the other. But unless we're asking questions and, as you say, engaging with them, we'll never know where they're at. And they may well be ripe for the gospel, but we just won't know unless we ask them a question.
Absolutely. And that's well, the art form that Jesus not only cultivated for us, but perfected, of course, was the asking of questions, even when he's asked a question. Because oftentimes Muslims might ask you a question and they might be challenging, like, why do you think the Bible is God's word? Don't you know it's been changed? Kind of a thing. And then the question, so now you have to respond with a question. Well, you're claiming it's been changed. How do you know it's been changed? Or how do you know this? And you can engage in conversation. So even when it becomes debatey, you can still engage in conversation. But oftentimes I find that one of the best ways to form a true relationship with a Muslim, whether they're Indian, Pakistani, from the Middle East, whatever it might be, is to simply ask them some questions like, hey, I notice, if it's a woman, I notice you wear the hijab. Why do you wear that? What does that mean for you? What does that signify? Or can you tell me more about the Quran itself? Or one of the best questions you can ask a Muslim is simply, what do you think of Jesus? Because they have an opinion about Jesus because the Quran references Jesus. Whether it does correctly or incorrectly is another issue, but you can begin to understand what they think, and then that leads to a great conversation.
Well, it certainly is, I guess, something that everybody has a heart for, sharing the gospel with our neighbours. And as I said before, really, the Muslim community are growing here in Australia due to particularly immigration, but I guess even just natural population growth. But you've made some great points there, and I think the key thing, as you've said, is not to see a Muslim as a notch on your belt, you know, that you can sort of go say, yes, I've won another one for the kingdom, but just to make genuine friendships and then watch the relationship unfold. Because I guess even in your case, it was a 9-year journey. So it wasn't just a, you know, one hit wonder. Someone just shared, like you mentioned, those Baptist guys that came and met you. It wasn't just an instant conversion. It took a long time for you to wrestle with the facts and come to a point of conversion.
Absolutely. And in fact, it rarely ever is. Even if you're talking to somebody who's not a Muslim, they have other backgrounds. I know of even atheists who will tell you they were subtly witnessed to over the course of 15, 16 years sometimes, and of varying degrees of intensity. But I think oftentimes we do see people who take years. And there certainly is the reality within the Muslim context, and frankly, any Eastern context, whether it's Islam or Hinduism or even various forms of Christianity or aberrant Christianity, where people have a hard time letting go. See, people don't realize this, but in the East, religious identity is not something that's appended to your individuality. Religious identity transcends individuality because it's a very communal, honor-shame-based culture. And that's true of multiple religions within an Eastern culture, but Middle Easterners and Easterners are very much allegiant to their culture and to their community. And so changing your religion isn't simply like changing your socks. It's changing you, which is, of course, what Jesus talked about, right? He says to die to self.
Mm.
As a good, thoroughgoing Middle Easterner, he knew what it meant to change your worldview, would be a fundamental shift in who you are. So yes, it does take a long time, which is why, you know, Matthew 28:19 is not called the Great Suggestion. It's called the Great Commission, because it's the process of committing yourself to a very long process. Sometimes it can be short. Someone can become a Christian on the first sitting, or you sit down on the couch, and maybe it's been years of preparation of somebody before you. But oftentimes discipleship takes years after that. Mm. So we're never to rest on a conversion experience or anything like that. We are to strive for those, but recognize that the reality is that this is a commission process, and it requires lifelong commitment.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your story with us today, and for giving us some great insights. I mean, obviously, coming from the background that you've come from, it, you know, adds a lot of strength to what you're sharing. So we really do appreciate your insights on that, and do trust that you enjoy the balance of your time here in Australia, and hopefully it'll be not too long before you come back again.
I hope so, too. Thanks so much.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.